a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Good morning. This is Joe Kafka with the Governor's Office. We are ready to begin our weekly news conference. We thank you for joining us. This morning we have Mike Rounds along with us and also Lieutenant Governor Dennis Dugard. Governor Rounds.
Good morning. We're moving our way through this legislative process. It seems like the days are moving a little bit more quickly. I did spend this last and Monday and Tuesday in Washington. I had the opportunity to participate in the National Governors Association annual winter meeting. We have the opportunity to visit directly with the president. I was fortunate to also visit with the First Lady about her new plans in terms of fighting obesity and leading a national effort. I commend her on what she's trying to do. This will, in a long-term basis, help all of our states in terms of the health care issues that we face. If we can start working with children, moving in a direction of reducing the amount of obesity across the United States, it will save us in our long-term health care costs. I also had the privilege and responsibility of serving on the Council of Governors, which is a new council appointed by President Obama. There are 10 governors that are meeting with Pentagon officials, five Republicans, five Democrats. Our goal is to work and coordinate the efforts of the National Guard and the Reserve, the Army Reserve, in responding to emergency needs. Catastrophic emergency needs in some cases. We're talking the hurricanes, earthquakes, and so forth, but also the coordinated effort between our National Guard and the Reserve in the future with regards to the authorization by the President versus request by governors on how we coordinate the efforts of both. This is the first time that governors have been invited to participate. We have done our best to recognize the red lines, as we would say, between the coordination of regular or full-time Army, Navy, Air Force, Coast Guard official or soldiers, airmen, and so forth, with National Guard, and how governors who are responsible as commanders-in-chief for their guard units, Air Guard and National Guard, how you coordinate that with emergency needs of utilizing reserve officers. We talked about the dual authorizations of perhaps having a guard general officer who has been appropriately trained and capable of wearing two hats, and also then being in charge during emergency situations of regular members of the armed forces. Those are the types of discussions that we're having. We're also talking about end strength, the strength between National Guard and the regular armed forces. How we coordinate the new uses that the National Guard is being used for in terms of it used to be that they were a strategic reserve. Now they literally are being a support group and in many cases on the front lines along with the regular armed forces in Afghanistan as well as in Iraq. And those are the issues that we're talking about, are the coordination between those two and how we go ahead long term. This was authorized by an act of Congress in 2008, and President Obama has just made those appointments now. So I've had the opportunity to work on this for only one day, but we have a series of meetings that we'll be participating in, and I think it's important because, as you know, members of the South Dakota National Guard have been actively engaged and are still actively engaged in the war on terrorism. We have soldiers in Kuwait. We have soldiers in Afghanistan at this time. Let me just open this up now for questions that you may have.
Governor, obviously the big thing on everybody's mind right now, particularly the Capitol, is the budget. And I was wondering to what degree you're participating in the discussions right now with Republican leaders in both houses and what your impression is on how things are going there.
As you know, the budget process takes the full 40 days in most cases, or at least the full 38 days if it's a regular run of the session, 36 days. But the regular run of the session, they go through each of the budgets. They review the information that's been provided by us. Most people, I think, now realize that we start working on this budget prior to September. We work through based upon the best information we have available. We make our revenue estimates in November and report them in December. Now the legislature has the obligation as the appropriators in this process to work through through and to ask questions and see if there are better ways to do things, come up with, if possible, innovative ways, approaches, and really question the, you know, what we've tried to put together. When we were done in December and we proposed our budget, we made the decision that this time, for the first time, and please remember, we have the same amount in our budget reserves now as we did in July of 2003. We still have the lowest taxes of any, lowest taxes per capita of any state in the nation, and we want to continue that. And in doing so, we have slowed significantly the growth in government. As a matter of fact, if you take a look over the last 3 years, the upcoming year and the last 2 years, the growth in government expenditures has been less than 1%. And now the appropriators come in after we've had a chance to look back and review what the department heads have asked for, and we've made our proposal. Now the appropriators come back in and see whether or not they agree with us and whether or not the direction that in many cases they've considered in the past to be appropriate if they want to make changes. And that's it takes time to do that. A select group of legislators who serve on the Appropriations Committee take all of their time during this process to review it and then to try to figure out if there's a better way to do things. We support that process. It does work very well. It's one that is complicated, and if you if you're on the outside looking in and have not been engaged directly with it, it can be difficult to understand. And so I think there's other legislators that sometimes get frustrated with it. But at the same time, these appropriators are the ones that take the time to actually do the work. They sit in a committee room and they listen to a huge amount of information with lots of numbers and lots of different programs that they become very familiar with. We, this year, if you take a look at the budget proposal for fiscal year 11, the one coming up, we're up about $51 million from last year. $52 million of the $51 million increase is in Medicaid. And so there's not a lot of areas in which we're increasing. For the second year in a row, we've reduced salary policy on state employees. For the second year in a row, we've asked providers to go with a 0% increase. And for the first time, we've asked the legislature to modify the anticipated amount of participation in the state aid education formula from an anticipated 1.2 to a 0% increase, and ask local school districts to get by on the same amount that we sent them last year. It's a challenging process. I shared with with Republican leaders yesterday that we looked forward to working with them as they start putting together all the bits and pieces. I think they're still searching for ways. I know that they've set up as a goal to not use any budget reserves. It's a commendable goal. I told them that I made the decision that rather than cutting services, I thought it was appropriate during this rather rainy day or snowy day that we consider using the budget reserve, 31.8 million dollars. And I'm still asking them, and I know that as they've considered some of the things that we've asked them to do, right now I think they're probably in excess of a minus 40. But we haven't heard the whole story from them yet, and I would expect that over the next couple of days they'll start trying to craft it back in. And finally, remember, they have to get the final information about, if we can get one more month worth of anticipated revenues in, that helps them to get a little bit more of a feeling for just what the next year is going to look like as well in terms of revenues coming in. And I think it's appropriate for them to get that. That should be, I think, either the last part of the first week in March or the first part of the second week in March when that should become available to them.
At the beginning of the session, if I can follow up, you said you were pretty skeptical over their ability to find cuts beyond the budget you proposed. Is your negotiations with them, do you think they're any closer to finding a way to do that?
I haven't heard of a solution yet. And that may be because they're simply researching to find out what the impacts are. Remember, if you take Medicaid and you take K-12 education, the technical schools and universities, you're looking at about right around 85% of the entire budget. And I know that in some cases, some of our legislators have said K-12 is absolutely off the board. We're not going to touch it. Medicaid, I'm not sure how you would reduce Medicaid at this stage of the game. In fact, we're still adding people on the Medicaid rolls. So I really don't think that that's going to be there available. When you start talking about significant reductions elsewhere, it becomes more challenging because, you know, you still remember the fiasco that occurred when I asked for $1 million to come out of the Highway Patrol on a one-time basis. And that's part of the corrections and what we call protecting the public budget. You know, that's 11% of the remaining part of the general bill. There's only 4% left that operates everything else in government. And so it's not like there's a whole lot of money for everything else. So they're going to have to make up their minds if they're going to try to significantly reduce services, or if they're going to, I suspect there'll be some discussions about reducing the amount that we use for ongoing maintenance of buildings. I would suspect that there will be a discussion about, can we get by with just the background items in terms of the operations of government across all lines. There has been some discussion about trying to cut issues within the universities. I mean, that's been an ongoing discussion quietly. But they have to also remember that the universities have record enrollment. And when you have record enrollment, you have to have teachers. You have to take care of having the classrooms available and so forth. And I think when you talk about it in a big picture and you say, gee, you've got $1.1 billion, should be easy to just cut X amount out. Well, when you start identifying where you're going to cut that, that's when it becomes more difficult. So,
Governor Dave Law.
Dave, go ahead.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Governor, just a quick question on the with regards to the stimulus monies. Would you foresee any more stimulus dollars coming to help offset the Medicare shortage or shortfall? And then also, we saw the COBRA coverage is extended in stimulus. Do you see any of that maybe getting extended beyond where we are right now, unemployment trust fund, et cetera?
We're not counting on it. I did sign a letter along with, I think, 43 or 44 other governors recommending to congressional leaders that they consider extending the enhanced Medicaid, which is about, for South Dakota, about $26 million over two quarters in the next fiscal year. But I see that as we did that, the Senate passed the proposed jobs bill, which was without any enhanced Medicaid and did not extend COBRA benefits to the best of my knowledge. So right now that particular bill has moved out of the Senate and it did not include either one of those. So I don't think it's something that that would be fixed during this legislative session. We have built our budget in such a fashion that if it were to occur, we could handle it without a special session. But at this time, we can't count on it. And I don't know if the odds of getting an additional enhanced FMAP are even 50%. I suspect it may not be.
Governor, that extra $26 million over two quarters, that would be in the state's FY11 fiscal year?
Yeah, it'd be the last two quarters of the fiscal year 11. Fiscal year, but or in the FY 2011. So it's in the budget that we're working on right now for next year. That would be where it would impact. But it's the way that it feeds in is we have to match federal money and on Medicaid. And if you have I'm just going to use a couple numbers. If you're at 63% federal to 37% state, the enhanced FMAP increases the amount that the feds put in and reduces the amount that the state would put in. And I think it's like 5 or 6% is the spread difference. But the amount in the enhancement is about $26 to $28 million. Once again, depending upon how many people are applying and how large your Medicaid population is, what your costs are. But it's between $26 and $28 million for the two quarters. But we've set it up because that if that were to stay on an enhanced level, then it would reduce the amount of general funds that we'd have to use to match the federal. So it's an easy fix should it occur. We've built the budget that way so that if it did occur, we could utilize it. But at this time, I'd be wrong if I told the legislature to count on it. Now, I think a couple of states did propose enhanced FMAP in their budgets, but I don't think we can count on it. So I think we have to move forward assuming that we're not going to get it. And even if we did receive it, it's one-time money, and it will not fix the structural deficit that still is prevalent for the fiscal year 2012 year, which is in excess of $100 million.
Governor Tony Mangan at KCCR Radio.
Yes, Tony.
Regarding the list for the Republicans that they're looking at for program cuts, have they given you any indication of what's on that list? And can you, and if they have, could you support any of those cuts?
Tony, I have not seen the list. I have suggested to leadership that the sooner they start putting together a solid proposal, the better off we'd be, but we have not seen the list. I know that that they are still doing their best to meet their goal of eliminating the structural or the budget deficit this year and reducing the structural deficit in fiscal year 2012. It's not going to be easy, and it would require significant changes in terms of programs available. And as I told them, I've made the decision that I think it would be appropriate to utilize reserve funds, but I want to hold it to the amount that I proposed in my budget. I don't want them to go over that amount. I support them in their efforts to try to make additional reductions, but I do believe that it's going to be very, very challenging once they see the impact to programs and services that are provided.
Would it be difficult, you think, in your mind, to accept any of those kind of cuts?
Well, Tony, I have to see them first, and you know, we've made up our mind that it was more appropriate to look at maintaining services and to be stable in terms of the services that we provide to citizens. If you take a look at the kinds of things that we've done, we haven't totally cut out services that people have grown to expect. We didn't change the opportunity scholarships because students expect them. We didn't reduce the payments to providers, although we did freeze them, because providers are taking care of people in nursing homes, and they're taking care of people that have no place else to go for their health care at a time in which they've lost their jobs. They take care, 68% of the people that are new on Medicaid are kids, and 11% are disabled adults. So this is not going to be easy to reduce Medicaid, as an example. But nonetheless, I think they're trying to find those places which would cause the least amount of pain and still be able to reduce the deficit, just like we did between September and December. That's the reason why we finally came to the decision that perhaps this was the right time, during a time in which our resources, the revenues, have been down, to use some of the rainy day account to maintain those services, by the way, all of which the legislature has approved in prior sessions. And so to make a change now will be difficult. They can do it, but I think it's going to be difficult for them to have the votes to do it, and they'll have to explain why the services were good before and they're bad now. And I've just asked them to, to look at, tell us which programs you want to cut, but don't expect us to do the same programs with just less money. That's, if we thought we could, we would have recommended that in the budgets.
Governor Jonathan Ellis with the Argus Leader.
Yes, sir.
You recently sent a letter to Senator Johnson outlining your opposition to creating a wilderness area within the Buffalo Gap grassland. Can you elaborate on those concerns?
Sure. The wilderness designation basically makes it extremely difficult to manage areas. You basically exclude a human footprint in there in terms of managing it with regards to noxious weeds, if it's regard to fire and so forth. It makes it more challenging. The best example that I can give you is right now in the Black Hills, where a mountain pine beetle is threatening the wilderness area in and around or just south of Mount Rushmore. And, you know, we've got a good working relationship with the Forest Service out there, but their hands are really tied, and it's difficult for them in a wilderness area to really get in and to manage the resources that are there. And we've kind of taken the approach that the reason why some people want to make that into a wilderness area is because it's a beautiful, pristine area. But it's a beautiful, pristine area because people that are there right now and that are watching it are taking care of it, and they're managing it. I don't want to see any more wilderness area designations until we get a better understanding about what we can do to protect those beautiful areas and to have a little bit of a management tool available to us. And I don't see that happening at the federal level. And as we've discussed, what we're going to have happen out in the Black Hills and some of the wilderness areas out there, we're going to have a fire. And the question is when? And if you, in some areas, as a matter of fact, on one of the hiking paths that goes to a wilderness area on its way from one of our lakes right there in Custer State Park up to the summit of, Harney Peak, there's a good possibility that they may very well have to prohibit people from those walking paths because of the risk of fallen timber and trees that are falling over that are dead. There's got to be a better way to manage and a more appropriate way to responsibly respond to insect and bug damage. And until such time as we can find a way to perhaps have an agreement on how to protect it, I always tell people it's nice to say that you want to keep things in a pristine area, but we ought to be taking a look at it kind of like a person watches their garden. You can make it beautiful, and you can have lots of nature there, but I still think you have a responsibility to manage it. And to simply walk away and say, we're going to let this overgrowth continue until such time as we have a major fire that literally destroys the seed that's on the ground because of the heat of the fire, because of all the fuel that's on the ground, that is not a responsible a plan of long-term taking care of an area. So it's beautiful out there in this particular area. We want to see protected, but going as far as a wilderness area is I think, the wrong choice to make. Well, with all due respect to the senator, and I've just asked him to reconsider his decision.
Governor Rounds.
I'm going to come right here in the room here for just a second. We had a question right here. Yes, go ahead.
Okay. I was going to say, you requested two presidential disaster declarations for the Christmas blizzard and as well the ice storm. Are there any underlying issues going on right now, any remaining issues with that, or do you foresee anything to the spring flooding?
We have I've requested two presidential declarations. One of them for the blizzard that occurred in and around Christmas time. The second one during January, which included not only heavy snow but an ice storm, high winds, a power down, and so forth, or power lines down. They are kind of different areas, and so each of them, and during different time frames, so we have to ask for two. Now, the one in December has a little over $1 million in damages statewide. The second one, and that's just at the threshold. The second one is over $22.5 million, and clearly, I think that one's going to be looked at very, very quickly. We do not have a time frame for when they will look at it, but we do work closely with FEMA to expedite it. We did do the preliminary damage assessments. We looked at both individual and public needs in both locations. The assessments were in and done. We've coordinated our efforts with tribal officials. We actually delayed the December request so that Pine Ridge officials had more time to assess the damages down there. Now it's simply a matter of waiting for FEMA to step back in. Remember, the emergency responses have already been completed. Now it's a matter of reimbursement for those and mitigation funds to perhaps stop some of the damage from occurring should another ice storm occur in the future. So I don't see anything there. I am concerned about flooding. We talked about it last week. There's a very good reason to believe that there's a high probability of flooding in a number of areas, on the Big Sioux, on the Jim, on the White River, on the Bad River. We expect that there, we have to expect the worst. Northeastern South Dakota is going to be in tough shape. The worst case scenario that we could have would be an extended period here of cold weather and then a very quick warm up with in the northeastern part, with rivers still having a lot of ice on them in the southeastern part of the state and causing a real a difficult time for that water to drain out, or a very slow release of the water down into the tributaries down to the Missouri River. The best situation that we could have would be a very, very gradual and slow spring thaw, with the thaw starting in the southeastern part of the state and getting some of those rivers thawed out more quickly than the northeastern part. But right now, National Weather Service has advised us that we could be looking at a situation very similar to 1997, which is which was pretty devastating in some areas along the Jim and the Big Sioux. Now, I'll go back. One more here in the room. Did you have a question?
You mentioned there will be about no changes to the Opportunity Scholarship because students would expect them. Do you then not see the House bill to delay the funds as a change in expectations? And do you see that might affect enrollment, which you had talked about at record levels?
I do have a concern with that particular proposal. I'm not sure that that is the correct way to go about reducing expenses. I know that I have to measure that with the legislature's desire to find a way to delay those expenditures, and I'll look at that. I'll listen to some of the testimony, and before I make my mind up, should the bill get to my desk, before I decide what I'm going to do with it, I'll look at what the other options are. But I'm really not in favor of changing the time payments, because it seems to me that with young people, cash flow is pretty important. And to delay the cash flow of that amount of money make it difficult for some of them to be able to attend school. And I've got a concern about that. I'll go back out. There was a question coming over the air.
Yeah, Governor Rounds, Stephanie Bechera with News Center One. I was wondering, I know that you've been a big proponent of the Sanford Lab, and with the talk that the funding might not come through, what are your concerns, and are you doing anything now to kind of ensure that funding is going to come through?
The decision to party line vote against our proposal twice to me was very disappointing. This project has a history of bipartisan support. Tom Daschle and Bill Jankel worked on this project back in 2001, bipartisan, giving each party credit for participation. I have had a very good working relationship with members of our congressional delegation. Full support. We have shared the successes, and we have been very careful to keep this and to communicate in a very bipartisan fashion. Senator Johnson secured $10 million in HUD funding, which was critical in allowing us to begin the dewatering process. In 2005, we had a vote of the legislature for over $19 million that was clearly bipartisan in nature. I think the vote was like 98-6 with like one abstention in a special session. Clearly, once again, bipartisan. And that sent a powerful message to the National Science Foundation about long-term support. It sent a powerful message to the science community that South Dakotans understood very well the long-term implications, and that we put this laboratory above partisan politics. I understand the need for the minority party to flex their muscles in some cases, but I was very disappointed in the judgment that somehow this particular project at this time should be the focus of their desire to show that they had the ability to stop a two-thirds vote. I know that there had been discussion on the floor of the House suggesting that this money that we had taken, and we literally, we went to multiple locations to scrape together the money, the $5.4 million needed, at a minimum, needed to get us through this bridge area. We didn't, it wasn't easy to come up with the money for the funds. We kept it, we stayed away from asking for general fund assistance because we knew we needed the general funds during this year and next year to help get closer to balancing our budget. So we kind of scraped together one-time dollars that we could not use and will not use for funding ongoing obligations such as state employee salaries, provider increases, or K-12 education funding increases, because all of those would have been ongoing in nature, and it would have impacted next year's structural deficit negatively. So we went to other funds. We thought it was appropriate. I know there's a discussion that somehow we'll just find a way to fund it. The authority, the science authority, is a separate entity. When we first looked at it, we wondered whether or not it was appropriate to put it in the general bill. We thought it might be difficult to do so because the authority is not an ongoing operation of state government. There is a separation between an authority and state government for liability purposes and so forth. That's the reason why we asked that this be funded separately. I know that there had been a discussion of, well, they'll find a way to do it somehow. But there's a bigger issue here. We had, as a state, been viewed, I believe, by the science community as being extremely supportive and stable in support of this project, and that it had risen above what they will view, I believe, as partisan politics. I think this makes it a very difficult situation, and I think it's going to be a real challenge to fix that message that is being sent. And I think that's the part that I'm most concerned with, is the science, the National Science Foundation, and the scientists had seen in South Dakota a location that had risen above that, and now we're back into it. And it's going to be very challenging to correct that, what I believe is hopefully a misunderstanding that can be fixed. Bob?
Speaking of one-time funds, within the supplemental appropriation, which the Senate has passed, by my count, it's about $15.6 million in transfers, one-time transfers from a variety of accounts.
One-time funds, yeah.
Yeah. That would be used to fund ongoing operations.
Right.
I have a question about one of those in particular, which is a $9.6 million transfer from the construction tax refund program, the large project refund program, which is a separate issue of itself this session. Would that $9.6 million have to be repaid in a future year?
We don't think so. When we looked at it, it appeared that this, remember, when we bring these projects in and we look at what they have accumulated, we try to account for the money that it's going to take, that if they ask for the refund and they qualify for the refund, that we could then have the money available to us. Yeah. And so we do the best we can to assume when they're coming in, how much it's going to take to have available should they make the request that now we've completed our project and we want to turn it in. We believe that the money that we had set aside, that this money will not be asked for back. So we think, in terms of making the original estimate over what it would have been over the last couple of years, we believe that the dollars that we asked for there will not be asked for back. That's our assumption. Yeah, there are timelines on where the money can be applied for, and they have a certain deadline over how long it is that they can actually wait before they apply for the money back. That's part of it, but it's a combination of that. And then also, you assume when they send the money in that the money, that those projects will be built. Now, if they don't build those projects, then some of that, those dollars that you've held back will not be reimbursed either. But it's a combination of those. And honestly, for a couple of years, we were not recognizing it as a large amount. And so this last year, we had to go back and look at what might actually be impacted. And so they made some assumptions about how much would be necessary. We think, after looking at it, that we may have passed some of those deadlines. And in doing so, we won't have to reimburse those funds. That's our best guess right now. Yes, sir.
Are those companies that could have applied and just gave up the money?
Some of them just missed their deadlines. Matter of fact, some of them actually came back in and said, will you extend deadlines for us? And we said, you know, it's going to be awfully difficult to extend some deadlines simply because the bookkeeping wasn't done correctly. And it's pretty clear in law. And it's not all of it, but that's some of it.
And there was a bill to that extent last year.
Last year, yeah. It's happened. You know, I mean, it occurs. And sometimes it's, you know, in some of the projects you say, well, gee, the only reason why they're coming to South Dakota is because you have this refund. In some cases, that's not the case. They're coming, and I think that's the reason why you see now in the legislature attempts to maybe tool down during this rather difficult economic time. You see this attempt to spool down a little bit what some of those refund projects are, because, you know, we're having a tough time generating revenue. And at the same time, you don't want to lose the revenue on projects that might leave. And also, if they build one of the discussions right now, particularly on linear projects, the pipelines, is if you take away their credits on some of the stuff they might build on one side of us or on the other side of us, some of the pumping stations. If those pumping stations are built in South Dakota, then we get the long-term benefit of the property taxes that are paid on those literally for a generation. So it's a balancing act of what's better, to have the ongoing revenue every single year, or do you try to pick up the money right now and perhaps lose part of the assets that they would build in another state? That's part of the discussion going on upstairs.
Just two related questions on supplemental appropriations. One is, it appears, by my really rough math, that you take about $6 million, you're proposing about $6 million of general fund cuts, roughly appropriate levels for current budget years for this year. Does that sound right? I mean, I've added up all of the...
We've done a couple of items. Number one, we've had a hiring freeze on, and we basically had a travel freeze on. Anything out of state's got to be approved through the chief of staff's office. Any hiring has to be approved through the chief of staff's office. We've delayed. Sorry?
Utilities, too.
Yeah, and then that's right. There was utilities as well. Thank you. There were basically three areas. We did make some savings. Remember back when we originally did this budget, we anticipated some pretty expensive fuel bills and electrical bills. Some of that's come down. That saved us some money. But also, we pretty much stuck to and said, you're going to have to slow down the travel. And anybody that had a position open, we delayed the hiring wherever possible, except in line item areas. People that are answering the phones and social services, taking applications for the SNAP program and so forth, the guards at the prisons and so forth, because that's 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. You got to have people in there to do those. But other than that, we really tried the secondary levels, managers and so forth. If we could delay the hirings and so forth in some of those areas, we did so. So there was some money saved there. But then travel also, we're doing our best to try to reduce anything out of state. They've really got to have a pretty good justification as to why they're doing it. And that helps somewhat. But utilities was a large part of it. A little bit more favorable utility rates. And, you know, that impacts universities as well as the state's general plant here.
And the final question on that would be, like, I think about the home state plan, you talked about one-time cost. How that would be inappropriate in the future for the 2011. At the same time, you're doing that very thing. Sources of funding are the same. Right?
Yeah, but we're doing it for 2010.
Right.
And so we're using it as a one-time source to get us through until next year. Because we know that it's a one-time need to get us through this year. We could have gone back and said, you know, we're only going to use ongoing revenue sources, but that would have meant, in terms of filling the budget gap, I would have had to have used an ongoing source to do it. That would have helped in the restructuring in terms of the structural deficit next year, but it would have meant a new revenue source in order to do that. And it when your revenues are coming down, and this year our revenues are still coming down, what you do is you try to find a one-time thing to get through till the end of the year from what your estimates were from the previous year. Then you revise your estimate numbers for the coming year. And if you take a look at the revisions, we continue to revise. And in fact, we actually, in many cases, revise down what we expect for revenue estimates compared to what our expenditures are going to be. But each new year, you start over again.
Right now, it looks like, based on something, we're only here about $15 million short of revenue.
Yeah.
Shorter of revenue.
Well, that's, and once again, we're going to go back in and see if we can't scrape up dollars to get by for this year. I mean, we've got dollars out there right now. We know right now that our revenues, and we're going to take a look at the revenue estimates again here in March, first week in March, and find out what our revenues are going to be for this year, what our shortfalls are. It may be necessary to look for additional one-time shortfalls to get by. Do we want to take it out of the budget reserve? No, we don't. Are we going to look elsewhere? Yeah, we are. I mean, and part of it means if there's a way to reduce expenditures someplace else, we're going to be looking at further reductions yet this year. And but the other side of it is if you can find a one-time source someplace, you'll try to apply that as well to get by for this fiscal year, because your revisions for next fiscal year will be ongoing versus ongoing.
Governor, can I offer some thoughts?
Yeah.
The other point I think that it's important to remember is the argument that was leveled on the House floor by those who were voting against the supplemental appropriation differs from the use of this supplemental appropriation for 2010. As Governor Rounds mentioned, we're looking at one-time funds to meet existing commitments, existing budget needs. Those who oppose the homestake appropriation on the floor, their argument in part was based upon the notion that that money, that one-time money, should not be spent on this one-time use, but on increasing commitments beyond the commitments that we have in the proposed budget, increasing funding for ongoing operational expenses, which could be done this year, but then what about fiscal year 2012?
Yeah.
We'd have a hole that's twice as big.
Right. You'd increase if you use the one-time money for K-12 as an example, or for an increase in provider inflation rate, or an increase in salary policy for state employees. What you've done then is dug your hole deeper in the fiscal year 2012 time period, because now the money's gone, but your commitment is there for a higher amount. And if you didn't come through, believe me, next year we'd hear people hollering that you just cut K-12, or you just cut providers, or you just cut state employees.
Governor, completely different issue.
Yeah.
One of the candidates for governor, Senator Howley, is repeatedly on the stump criticizing your administration for what he says is delaying and obstructing, getting in the way of a company's efforts to move to the Black Hills and $60 million in jobs. He doesn't name the company, but it seems like it's likely a uranium mining company that wants to move in there. And I'm just wondering if you had any thoughts on whether your administration is actually standing in the way of that coming here.
I don't have a clue as to what Senator Howey is talking about. I've never heard that. Anything else?
Thank you.
You bet. See, I will pass out just for everybody, just so that in part of your story, in case there's any misunderstandings about FTEs or anything like that, I asked Joe to put together a list so that you can see where any FTE growth in government has been and what funds are being used to pay. I don't think you've ever had that before, and so we just broke this out. We thought maybe you'd like to see that. Okay? And anybody listening in on this, if you'd like any information on the FTEs here, we'll send out a sheet for you. Did we miss him, Joe? Sorry about that.
Anybody else listening?
Sorry.